You're listening to Dr. Anne West on Truth from the Source, bringing you cutting-edge interviews discussing important life, health, environmental, and metaphysical issues that could affect the well-being of our lives. Join me every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on bbsradio.com.
Greetings and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics. I am your host, Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and you're welcome to visit our website, towardthelight.org. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers. And there will also be call-in opportunities so people can ask questions and make comments during the second half of the show. International as well as American callers can ring in to 888-268-4313, and that is toll-free again, 888-268-4313. This week, we feature a very special friend and experiencer, one who has had a near-death experience, and one who has also written a very profound book called More Than Meets the Eye, True Stories About Death, Dying, and Afterlife. Please welcome Yvonne Perry. Yvonne, how are you?
Doing well, Juliet. Thank you.
Well, welcome to the show, and it's really, really wonderful to have you with us, and I've really been looking forward to this, as we've got a little bit of history together. You've been to the Friends of Irons meetings that I hold once a month here in Nashville, Tennessee. And tell me again how you did find out about the FOI meetings.
I was doing research for the book that I was writing and came across a friend, Linda Woods, who had been to an FOI meeting and said, well, if you're writing a book about near-death experience, the place you have to go is to the meeting on about this topic and to hear what other people have to share. And I showed up and loved it and have continued to be a part of FOI here in Nashville.
Oh, that's wonderful. Bless Linda. She's such a friend. And she's actually, I was on her radio show called Windows to Wellness a few years back talking about my NDE. And it's really exciting because people like Linda Woods and PMH Atwater, for example, have really inspired me to kind of come out of the closet, as it were, because I used to be very hidden about all of this. And now your book is really helping people in a tremendous way to also become more educated about the topic of death and dying and the afterlife and to not fear it. And so what I'd like to do is start by asking you about your near-death experience, because you did have one. Now, was this also back in 76?
Yes, that's correct. I was 17 years old in 1976, and give you a little update on my age. But it was the night before homecoming, and my brother and I came home from school. I brought a girlfriend home from school with me. We were going to bum around for the rest of the afternoon, and started playing piano, not really paying attention to what my brother was doing in the background. Well, he was cooking French fries. He had a pan of grease. And as soon as he finished cooking it, of course, we stopped playing the piano long enough to go and share in the treat. And as we were sitting there watching TV, I began to smell smoke. And I thought, oh, my goodness, something's not right here. I went into the kitchen about the time that the pan burst into flames. And being a 17-year-old and feeling very responsible for the household when my parents were not home and feeling very responsible for my brother, I knew immediately I had to do something to get the fire out and to get us out safely. But at the same time, I was panicked, not knowing what to do. I picked up the pan, started to walk across the kitchen thinking, I'll just take it outside, get it out of the house, we'll be safe. Well, things didn't go as planned. My hand actually caught on fire, and I set the pan down to extinguish my skin. And as I did, the tablecloth that I set the table on began to be in flames as well. So I picked it up again thinking, this is not good enough. I've got to get it out of here. I mean, I'm the one that's in charge here. Threw it through the screen door, and as I did, I splashed enough grease on the floor that I could not stand up. I fell down into a puddle of flames, and the flames continued to worsen as they caught the tablecloth on fire and a coat that was hanging on the back of one of the dining room chairs, and I was stuck there in the puddle of flames. It was too slippery for me to get up, and the flames were too high around me for my girlfriend to reach in and help pull me out. My brother, of course, was panicking. He was trying to get my mother on the phone to say, what do you do? How do you, and what do you do? This is kind of a situation that you are not prepared for at that age, or really at any age. But as I lay there kicking and screaming in the flames, I realized that I was all of a sudden not in my body. I was looking at myself from a perch above my body, looking down on the scene. And even though I knew I had been burned, as I had seen my hand was on fire, I did not feel any pain whatsoever. Now, I don't know what to account that to, except that I was simply not present fully in the body. I had a life review that lasted about 3 seconds where I had seen everything that I had done in my life and read my obituary in the paper before I actually my friend finally was able to extinguish enough the flames around me to reach in and pull me out. And when I did, I slammed back into my body and immediately began feeling horrible pain from the third degree burns. Well, of course, got me to the hospital where I was treated for the condition. But that near-death experience and the out-of-body experience changed my life. I have never feared death since then. It's just amazing, and I hear a lot of that in researching for my book. A lot of people who have had an NDE share that same revelation that, well, they're not afraid of dying anymore. They've been to that place of peace, that place of serenity where everything is exactly as it should be. It's the peace that we're all searching for and exist on another plane. I wanted to go back there, especially in the few weeks following such an injury. There were many times when I thought, oh, God, just take me out of this. Let me be in that place of peace again. But it wasn't the divine will for me to do that, and I walked through that. And I believe as a result of that, I have now a calling to share with other people the blessing of the afterlife and to help people not be afraid of the transition of crossing over.
You know, this is very interesting because I was noting the date of your NDE, and I had my big NDE in the mid-70s. PMH Atwater died in the mid-70s. Bill Taylor, who was on last week's show, also had an NDE in the 70s. And yet, in such a huge way, a lot of us weren't even able to come out and talk about it at that time. Although it was right after that that IAMS became incorporated as the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And I think it is very profound how, you know, it took all of this time for people to really come out and be able to talk about this and all these wonderful books that are circulating about it. So was it your NDE, Yvonne, that inspired you to write the book, or what was the incident that sort of brought on the muse, the inspiration to write and produce this book, which was, by the by, released, published last year here in Nashville, Tennessee. So what sort of brought that on?
Well, I noticed that I was having a lot of visitors from the other side, some out of human form, some non-physical visitors, and these began to be more and more frequent, and I kept thinking and praying and meditating and asking, why is this becoming so common for me? I don't think I'm a medium. I don't think I'm a channelist. But maybe there is a calling here. And more people, as I would discuss my experience, would say, oh, you've got to write a book about that. You should share that in a book format so that more people can hear about the near-death experience and be in a place and understand what it's like to be in that place of peace. Because so many people are afraid of death and dying, of the experience itself, as well as the grieving process that goes with it. And I feel like, well, maybe when my life kind of fell apart, when I had my midlife crisis at 40, I feel like my life just fell apart, and I began to really search, what is important? Is this all there is, what I'm experiencing now? And I kept going back to that near-death experience, that out-of-body experience, and thinking, no, there's got to be more. There's more than meets the eye. And when I said that, I thought, that's the title of the book. I'm just going to start reading it, not writing the book, not really knowing where to start. In writing a book, I started talking to other people and asking them about their experience. Lo and behold, it was like you said, Juliet, people were beginning to come out of the woodwork. All you had to do was open the door and share your experience. And they themselves, or someone they knew, or someone that they knew, had an experience and began to share it. Oh, you've got to talk to my friend. Oh, my father had an NDE. And it became, I guess, a little more comfortable once I began sharing, for other people to share in response to that.
What year do you remember when you actually started the project?
It was in 2003.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, I think, now, I did start the FOI Nashville in 2002, even though, and as I had stated before, I didn't join IAMS. I didn't even find out about IAMS until 1997. And for reference, feel free to visit their website, IANDS.org, the International Association for Near-Death Studies. I was so excited to find out about it because I said, oh my goodness, there are other NDEers all over the world. And I really wanted to connect with fellow experiences because, again, I had been totally shut down. I couldn't and wouldn't talk about my experiences because of people claiming it was a hallucination or what have you. And it seems that really just since the millennium, people have been able to come out and talk about it quite openly. And just as you're pointing out, people were just showing up and offering themselves and their experiences mm-hmm. and other people. So this is really a very tremendous thing that is going on right now and very relevant and very significant. Now, before you had your near-death experience, were you afraid of death?
I think a lot of people are. I know I was as a child. I was brought up in a very protective environment where my parents were always saying, oh, don't do that, you might fall. Oh, don't go there, you might get lost. Somebody might take you. So I was raised in a fear-based environment. So I'm positive that the fear of dying was also a part of that. But I also felt so spiritually connected to this other world. Even before then, I can remember as a child feeling like I had someone watching over me. I could feel the presence of angels and guides, not really having any teaching as a point of reference to know what was going on. And like you said, in the millennium in 2000, it seems like we've had a huge awakening about communication with the other side, the near-death experience, reincarnation, multi-dimensional lives, quantum physics. I think of several of the TV shows that are on. One of my favorites is the Ghost Whisperer on Friday nights at 7 here in Nashville. And I'm thinking people really are receptive a lot more now than they were when I had my NDE. When I had the NDE in the 70s, I didn't speak of it. It wasn't something I went around talking about.
Well, I didn't even know the term near-death experience until and when I was talking to Pia Mehta. I was trying to remember when I first heard that word because that was actually coined by Dr. Raymond Moody. Now, I prefer to call it an eternal life experience because as an experiencer, I did not even think of the word death. It never occurred to me that I had died. Mm-hmm. And most people don't even think about death, if the word even comes to them at all, because from our vantage point, we don't experience death. We just experience eternal life. And the observer sees, oh, that person has died, you know. So I'm really on a campaign here to change the term from near death because even that is not an accurate term because we don't come near death. We actually do die, or our bodies die. So I'm focusing on transforming that term into an eternal life experience. And also, something else I wanted to point out, when you said that you weren't a medium, actually I believe that all of us are natural mediums and clairvoyants and channelers. The thing is, we have been conditioned and trained not to. We've been trained out of it.
Right.
As children, we have our invisible friends,
right,
who are very, very real. They're not make-believe at all. But then again, we are conditioned out of it. And how absurd that we are taught that the physical plane is the only plane of reality, when actually the physical plane is just a hologram.
Right.
So I really like in encouraging you to give yourself more credit, because you very much are a medium, and it's natural breathing, really. And as we are becoming more aware of, you know, our real natural faculties that we find out more about as a result of being on the other side, and you were able to see so much and experience so much peace,
mm-hmm,
from being on the other side. Now, feel free to tell me about, you know, there's a special section in your book where you're talking about euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get into that a little bit, because I know several months ago we were dealing with this whole crisis dealing with Terri Schiavo.
Right.
And yet, you know, people in America will protest against abortion and all of that, and I think it's interesting how selective their pro-life is. They're pro-life when it comes to saving somebody in a vegetative state or an unborn child, but then they'll have the death penalty and kill other people because they've done a misdeed. So that's very strange. So let's get into euthanasia a little bit, because I really do have my strong feelings about that too, being that I was in a coma also. An irreversible, mm-hmm, coma, in fact.
Right.
So what did you find out as a with your research in that?
Well, that's probably another thing that helped me want to write this book. I was dealing with the passing of my uncle, who was on life support for almost a year, 1 year in the hospital. And his spirit was coming to me during these times, and he wanted to depart. But we had some family members who, of course, loved him very much and did not want him to depart. And I believe that the bond that he had with these family members made it very difficult for him to pass on. And he continued to hang on, even though his spirit was saying, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to go. The body just would not give up. Now, had this been 100 years ago, the body would not have had a choice but to give up. But since we have come in a society and medical advances have come along as they have, we have the technology to keep people alive much past the normal passing, the normal death of a body. And that was the case with my uncle. With him being on life support was just horrible. It's like watching somebody drown and they're tied to a life preserver, but they're still going down, and they're just going down much slower. And it was very difficult. So I began to do some research on euthanasia and came, like you said, Juliet, to have a very strong opinion that, it, first of all, it's very important to have a living will so that this decision is not placed on family members during a time of crisis. It's something that's already prearranged. In fact, my book has a living will in the back that can be notarized or signed and witnessed prior to there ever being a situation where it's needed, that will assure a person's ability to make decisions even though they may be unconscious or in coma. I feel like it's a choice that the person ought to make for themselves, and that it shouldn't be a burden placed on the family. However, in Terri's case, there was no living will or a directive in place prior to her going into this vegetative state. And just seeing what she was going through, I feel like it was just merciless to have the body deteriorating with there being no mental faculty, no ability to communicate, to live a productive life, to live an enjoyable life. And it was just prolonging her soul from being able to depart and go to that place of peace, to go to that place that you and I know quite well, that place of total just bliss, total bliss. Why would we want to keep someone tethered to a body that is failing, that has no ability to recover, which was the case with my uncle?
Well, I remember when I was reading that part about your uncle, it was so much like reading about myself. And even though I've naturally got low blood pressure, I could swear I could feel it rising as I read that. I just thought, oh, how daft of these people to hold someone back from having a natural transition at a natural time. And I notice you use the word medical advances, and in a way I feel like it's not really an advancement at all. It's so barbaric, and it is artificial. And I think that it is so important that we educate people about the fact that the physical body is not what constitutes life and consciousness.
Exactly.
That we, you know, consciousness actually is beyond the physical brain. In fact, the brain is just a receiver like the radio. It's not the source of consciousness at all. And then I got really upset when I was reading about Terry Schiavo, because I could feel her spirit really wanting to depart and go home and be free and experience the love and the joy and the bliss that we know that is on the other side, because the physical body is just an earth suit. It's just something that we don in order to operate on this dense, low vibrational frequency. So you've made some wonderful points, and I'm so pleased that you do have the living will included in the back of your book. And again, we are talking to Yvonne Perry, author of More Than Meets the Eye, a wonderful book about death, dying, and afterlife, and it also includes near-death experiences. My NDE is in there, the one that I had in the 70s, although I've had other ones, and I also, with great honor, wrote the foreword to this book. And Yvonne's website is yvonneperry.net. And what is the link that leads to this book, or is it just people click on the book cover on the homepage of your website?
The book cover will take you there. There's also a link on the homepage that says books.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then from there, people can also access a blog where you've got discussions going about this topic.
Yes, yes. There's actually other radio interviews on there, a lot of other things, some articles that people might find interesting about the afterlife, the near-death experience, and a blog to be able to interact with me and with other NDEers, as also a link to the IANS Association. And, of course, Toward the Light is on there, a link to your website, Julia.
Yes, my website, again, is towardthelight.org. Now let's get on to talking a little bit. We're going to cover some of the really interesting, kind of difficult topics. But again, I think it's really going to help our listeners to get a whole fresh new outlook about these things. And what I'm wanting to address now is suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have found in your research, and I know you've got a chapter about suicide in this book, and that's a very good topic to get into.
Right. Well, I think that just in this researching for my book, that a lot of people have felt at one time or another that things in their life were just so difficult that they didn't want to continue on. And when I mentioned my life falling apart when I was around in my 40s and had a midlife crisis, there was a time when I did not want to leave and did not want to live. I wanted to go on to that better place. I felt like it's just not worth it trying to stay here and fix everything that needs to be fixed. And it was during that time in 2000 that I had what some people may call a walk-in experience or a soul exchange. And I didn't know what that was, and probably a lot of our listeners don't know as well. So I'll try to give just a brief background on that by sharing my experience and what happened. When I found myself not wanting to live, I was beginning to have dissociative episodes where I would just nearly pass out on the floor, almost trance-like. I could hear things going on around me, but I could not speak. And during one of those, I felt that there was a presence around me, that something spiritual was going on that I could not explain. Now, when I got up from that, I noticed immediately that there was a difference. I had been in a marriage that I was not happy with, and I wanted to leave, but I had so many religious beliefs that there was something spiritually amiss from anyone who would want to leave a marriage just because you have outgrown the partner spiritually, because you're just not on the same wavelength. And there's nothing like a near-death experience that will do that to a marriage, that will just, because it seems like when you have an NDE, the soul just evolves through this, and you just soar into another dimension, and you, I won't say detach from the earth plane, but the earth plane just becomes not as important as what you know is on the other side, and the soul just keeps longing to pull upward and move toward that dimension.
Oh, that is so true. I second that.
It was that way with me. And then I spoke about the walk-in experience. For me, when I got up from that experience where I had passed out on the floor and was in a trance, it just came to me that I needed to walk out of the life that I was in. And that took some doing. I mean, it was one of those things that I just got up the next morning, I packed my bags, I left. Within 6 months, there were so many changes that had occurred in my life. I just did not feel like the same person. I was in a totally different life. My circle of friends had changed. My church affiliation had changed. My job had changed. Everything that could change in my life. In fact, I had been a pianist and had played keyboards for all of my life since I was 9 years old. I was a church pianist by the time I was around 12 or 13. I completely walked away from that and gave my piano to my daughter and hardly ever touch anything musical now. It's like this total shift of personality occurred for me. Well, I got curious about what this might mean. There were times when I kept thinking, I'm not the same person. Is it possible for somebody to die and come back in the same body as another person? And I was just pondering that when a few weeks later, you know how the universe works. You start saying something and putting that out there, they'll find an answer and bring it to you. And a woman that I was talking with started talking about her walk-in experience, where she had actually witnessed the changing out of a soul within her body in an instant. And I thought, oh my goodness, could that possibly have been what happened to me? And I was having all these confirmations in my body that, you know, the peace, the yes, that's on target, that's right. And then I started doing some research on the internet about walk-ins, soul exchange, come to find out that what I had experienced, the personality change, the marriage change, the walking into a new life, walking out of an old life, all of it being very rapid and in succession, was very characteristic of a soul exchange. So once I had accepted that, it made a lot more sense, and I was able to, it really answered a lot of questions, and I had more peace about what had occurred.
That's also very typical of the after effects of a near-death experience. It's such a spirit shift, brain shift. We're literally completely rewired as a result of going through a near-death experience. And so this type of thing becomes compounded, too, when you experience the soul exchange, as you're describing here, and also having a near-death experience, because as a result of the NDE, you do become a different person as a result of becoming more truly self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
That amnesia starts to dissipate, and you start having a recall of who you really are.
That's
on a soul level.
That's it, for sure. It's like you remember. It's like, oh, aha. You get the big aha after one of these near-death experiences.
Yes. And you really get the big picture of who you are. And, you know, as souls, we are absolutely huge. And, you know, the soul isn't some little pocket tucked away inside the body. It's quite the other way around, to be honest. The body is just the smallest part of the soul, which is living on other dimensions simultaneously. And so let's get into the suicide here, because you know, that a lot of people are afraid. You know, people contact me all the time about someone who's committed suicide, and they're afraid, oh, is that person going to go to hell? And, you know, I definitely think not, and that my experience is that it's like dropping out of a class, and you just have to go back and start at the beginning of the class.
Exactly.
What is your take on that?
Well, I believe that some of that dogma and teaching, that mindset, comes from our religious education. Some people do believe that it's an unforgivable sin leading to damnation, and those who commit suicide may be punished. Maybe they'll come back, if they happen to believe in reincarnation, that maybe that person will come back as a handicapped or having some other physical ailment to punish them for it. I don't believe that's the case at all. I, as you had mentioned, done some work with mediumship and channeling, and had a woman contact me through my book who had a son that had committed suicide, and she wanted me to see if I had got a message from him. And I saw him in a holding room, like he was waiting for something. And as I began to communicate with this person, he was waiting as if it were for the next ride in to another body, that he was waiting to come back full circle, pick up where he left off, and move forward, give it a second chance. It was like he had just dropped out of the class and he'd have to start over next semester.
It's sort of like going through customs and immigration and being turned back. No, you've got to go back now and to work it out.
Exactly.
And, you know, this is so exciting because, you know, here I'm from England and you're from the southern part of America. And, you know, all of us have come to these same conclusions through our experience and through our research. And I think it is really exciting because, upon the other side, I didn't see any devil or hell. I did see, you know, these people who were very sort of gray-colored and faceless and miserable and suffering, but it's just because they were going through a very intense purging process, but I was reassured that they too would return to the light, and that, you know, there's no fire and brimstone, and it's so curious where all these myths come from. And of course I was not raised in the Christian, especially the Baptist or the different faiths that are here in the south of the U.S., it's a very different sort of mindset than anything that I've been used to. Of course, the Church of England and even in Judaism, you know, we're exposed to Gehenna or the thoughts of hell. But MBEers think of hell as being fear of the unknown and not a literal place of hell. But I think, again, my feeling is that in order to have control over people, that they will say, oh, there's a hell, and if you commit suicide, or if you do this, or if you do that, you're going to suffer in a flaming hell, and that sort of thing. But God is love, the light is love,
that's
pure
right.
love, and nothing else. That's what I experience on the other side, and it sounds to me like you experienced the same thing. You didn't experience anyone being angry with you.
No, not at all.
And even the life review that you experienced, was that rather peaceful for you?
There was no shame, no judgment involved. It was more like a checkpoint list. Okay, here's this, here's this. It was more like there was a pre-planned agreement of what I would accomplish while I was here, and it was like giving me a checkup saying, okay, here's what's next, here's what's happened. And I suppose just by a few seconds of looking into that, I knew that my life here was not over, that I had work to do, that I needed to be back in that body and face whatever challenges existed in the physical plane, and knowing that the strength and grace would be there to do that.
And I also experienced the same thing. We really actually judge ourselves.
Right.
You know, there's no sea god sitting on a throne telling us at all.
But that's the way a lot of us in the southern United States were raised. They don't call this the Bible Belt for nothing.
Yes, or the buckle of the Bible Belt.
The buckle.
And this is very important work that we're doing here, is to you know, help alleviate the fear and the stigma about death, because again, death really is an illusion. It's just a transition, moving forward, moving upward, moving into a place of pure love and great wisdom and knowing. And there's a lot that is opening up in this area too about hospice work. And have you had a bit of experience with hospice? I know that, you've been to a live hospice in Nashville. Is that correct?
No, I've never visited there. My only work with hospice was what we faced with my uncle's passing.
Okay.
Right. But I did some research for the book because I knew that that was a vital part of the transitioning process.
Well, it is a really interesting point, you know, when you were talking about your uncle. Now, there was somebody else.
In my book?
Yes. Or I think it was...
My grandfather,
was it
maybe?
Your uncle or somebody that you actually... You saw his presence at a store or something like that. Was that
was my uncle after he had passed. Right.
We
had gone to. Yeah, that story is very interesting as well. My uncle had passed about a year, and we had gone back home for the holidays to visit family. And I was sitting at the 7-Eleven while my husband went in to pay for gas.
And please explain what that is so people outside of Nashville will know that is. I don't even know what that is.
A 7-Eleven. It's a gas station with a small supermarket inside where you can buy milk and a few items of grocery.
Okay.
So he went in to pay for the gas while I sat in the car, and I noticed a man standing outside the store, and he had a cup of coffee in one hand, a pack of cigarettes in another hand, and a little brown bottle tucked under his arm. The man looked exactly like my uncle would have looked in his 50s. The man looked up, saw me in the car, made eye contact with me, and communicated telepathically, "Thank you." I was moved to tears because the man's resemblance to my uncle, as well as my uncle was one who mixed Jack Daniels and Coca-Cola and smoked cigarettes. And the three items that man had in his hand were so representative of my uncle.
Wow.
That it was just uncanny. The man collected his items and started walking past the car where I was sitting. I turned around to see where he had gone, and he had vanished into thin air. He was not in the parking lot. He did not get in another car. It was a matter of a split second, and he was gone. And I knew I had seen my uncle's spirit.
That is really interesting. Now, there's a couple of different things that happen with that that I've experienced, is that somebody can appear and look very, very solid and then vanish. I mean, you can even touch them and they'll
mm-hmm.
feel solid in the moment and then they completely disappear. And then the other way that happens is that someone will channel through another human being just long enough to get the message across. You know, although this your situation sounds like it really was the spirit of your uncle who appeared and then vanished. But in some cases it can be another human being and they just, you know, become a channel or a medium, as it were,
mm-hmm.
of the departed individual, and they'll convey a message, and then they also leave.
Mm-hmm. And his message was thank you, and I knew exactly what he meant.
Oh.
I had played for his funeral and sang for the service, and he was thanking me for that.
Well, I'm sure he would thank you, because I would be thanking you as well. And, you know, again, it was interesting being in a coma for over 5 weeks and then losing my vital signs altogether. And being tethered that way is very, very difficult because there is still a silver cord that is visible from the other side. And when that tether is actually severed, then the entity is completely free of the physical body. Mm-hmm. But I really felt Terry Schiavo's spirit.
I remember you and I talking about that. We both sensed her spirit, and we were sending her love and light even while she was in the news so heavily. We were sending her love and light to help her soul transition.
Oh, big time. And then when I heard that they had removed the feeding tube, I said, go, Terry, go. That's the gold chance. Go, Lassie, go. And I was really rooting for her. And then when the news came that she had finally crossed over, I was so elated for her. I was so happy. And I really felt it was tremendously selfish of her parents. And bless them. I think they were just so full of fear. And, you know, it's really a shame how people so identify with the physical body that they think that that body is Terry Schiavo. And my friend's mum just crossed over, and she went back to England to go to her mum's funeral. And they were actually celebrating her life, and she shared a poem with me that they recited there that actually said, I am not at the grave. I am in the wind. I am in the sun. I am mm-hmm. in the trees. I am in the birds. You know, that sort of thing. And that is so true because I've been reading a lot where the spirits of people actually remove themselves from the body very quickly and oftentimes won't even appear at the funeral, you know, where people are, you know, looking at their bodies or what have you. I do remember one time when I went to a memorial service for a fellow musician who had been cremated, and people were looking at the urn full of the ashes. And meanwhile, I could see this man dancing away, doing a bit of a jig on the other part of the floor. And he said, I'm not over there. I'm over here dancing. And he was happy as could be. So when we allow ourselves to be receptive, when we talk to these people, they will show themselves to us.
Oh, absolutely. In my book, several people shared their stories, how it was a bird that came to them or another type of animal. Or they saw the spirit. They felt the spirit. The spirit was in a dream, many different ways. And the main message that each of these wanted to give to their families who were still in body was, I'm fine. I'm having a wonderful time.
They're very happy and they're very much at peace.
Right.
There was someone who crossed over at the end of November, and we had such a powerful telepathic message going because prior to his crossing over, I knew that he was frightened, and I had visited him a few days before, but there were a bunch of people there, so I couldn't really speak with him in private. The only thing I did was I gave him Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, when I left, I was so aware of him with me. Well, he already started slipping kind of in and out of consciousness. He was dying of cancer. So I telepathically conveyed to him, you have got nothing whatsoever to worry about because you're not going to die at all. You're going to be so free and so happy. And I could feel him responding to my message to him. And then he asked me to deliver a message to a friend.
Mm-hmm. Very common.
I didn't even know this man that well, but I was able to describe the messages to his wife and to our dear friend, and they were telling me how so much, yes, that's Earl, you know. And then when I got the word that he had crossed over, I asked him, what do you look like now? And I beheld this beautiful, beautiful vision, which was not of a human form at all. It was very wispy and beautiful, almost like a combination of a jellyfish, a luminous jellyfish or comet. It was
right.
Really, really beautiful. But just like you were saying, these people, once they've crossed over, they will use a bird a lot. In fact, a bird flew into my house a few weeks ago, and I had a premonition of that bird right before it happened, which was very interesting. Butterflies, a little breeze that will blow gently in your face all of a sudden, special music that you hear.
Even fragrances.
Fragrances, that's another one, big time. All examples of ADCs, or after-death communications. It's very, very natural to communicate with those you love, friends who crossed over and what have you, and even people you don't know that well, because there is no limit to what can be conveyed telepathically. And you touched upon that a bit in your book too, didn't you, Yvonne, about telepathy and having
right.
that kind of exchange between people.
That seems to be the way that they communicate with me most often. I had a few instances where I actually saw, like you said, a wispiness or a shadow figure, but mostly it's been either in dream form or in mental telepathy, where I knew that I was communicating with a spirit, and it was through not even thought, much quicker than thought. It's almost a knowing, like you already knew what the other person was thinking without
exactly.
them having to communicate it.
It transmits very, very quickly, and Claude Swanson, in his brilliant book, Synchronized Universe, he actually is able to prove with the chapter that he's written about telepathy, remote viewing, ESP, near-death and out-of-body experiences. This transmission does not weaken through time and space, because it is not affected by time and space. And whilst I was on the other side, everything was communicated telepathically, and indeed it was a deep knowing, and there was no putting on airs, and there was no sense of needing to hide or anything either, because there was just such a feeling of liberation and being constantly loved and accepted no matter mm-hmm. what, and also feeling a lot of protection and ease, a tremendous peace. And so I always encourage people to pay attention what they experience in their dreams, that it's not make-believe or a fantasy. The dreams are very important mediums through which we glean information, not only about events to come, but about what people are wanting to communicate to us, people on the other side as well as people who are on this plane.
Exactly.
You might have an experience from a relative who lives out of town.
Right.
Coming to the dream state. And that is something that is very, very important to pay attention to, because it is so real. And again, I want to make mention of your book, More Than Meets the Eye, True Stories About Death, Dying, and Afterlife. And your website is YvonneParry.net. It's a great website, and you've done tremendous work with your books. Now, are you working on any other projects that are connected with death and dying right now, or just writing articles?
Well, the blog seems to be taking some of my time right now. I feel like sharing maybe with some people in an interactive way, so that they can ask questions or share their stories, to just get people talking. That's something that's near and dear to both my heart and yours, Juliet, to get people talking about it, to help them feel like they're not crazy, they're not hallucinating, it is real. We've just been taught that it's not, and if we can get past what we've been taught and unlearn that, we can open ourselves up to a very beautiful world of interacting with our angels, with our spirit guides, with loved ones on the other side.
I know, in such a huge way, we've got to be deprogrammed,
mm-hmm.
don't we? Because as children, we were quite aware and quite knowing and so in touch with other realms, and what a beautiful place it was, and it is, but now we've got to unlearn all the conditioning that we've been subject to, and this work is very, very important for everyone to know about, that death indeed is an illusion. It is not real. And actually, I think the scary part is, for me anyway, it's been having to be in the physical body, because it's the physical body that really experienced pain, not being on the other side. And I noticed that when you had the fire, the experience in the fire, you experienced no pain at all.
None.
Until after you returned from your near-death experience.
Exactly.
So that is something that is really tremendous. And even people who have heart attacks, or people who drown, it seems the moment they let go of the panic and the fear, they suddenly experience such profound freedom,
mm-hmm.
and feeling so light. Did you have that experience of feeling really light?
I have felt that way even in meditation. Like I said before, once you've had an NDE, your spiritual connection is just so much stronger. You realize how very thin the veil is, and how that communication and that feeling of bliss and peace is a daily possibility. It's something that you can get to without having to die.
Well, I think also, you know, as a result of going through the NDE, we are rewired, and we're mm-hmm. always plugged in ways that we weren't, or at least we were not aware of prior to having these experiences. But I did have NDEs as a child, and so I've always been quite different as a result of that. But having this big NDE as a grown-up, also in the 70s, and I was in my early 30s, and I'm giving my physical age away, but I can honestly say that I just turned 30, because I lost my vital signs on my birthday. So I'm not lying when I tell people I'm 30.
You get a second start.
Yes, exactly. And going through that is just such a liberating experience, and knowing in no uncertain terms that only love is real, and we're able to talk about this from a place of authority, because it is something that we don't merely theorize about or read about or have someone preach to us and say, all right, this is the way it is. In fact, even when I share my experience, I encourage people to have their own experiences. But the good news is, you don't have to die in order to have such a spiritually transformative experience. Just like you were saying, Yvonne, through meditation, listening to beautiful music, playing music as I like to do. I tend to pop out of my body a lot when I'm playing the piano or doing music. In fact, one time when I was paralyzed, I asked the nurse to wheel me to a piano, because I was laid up, but then they put me in a wheelchair. She wheeled me to the piano, and somehow, with deep focus and concentration, I was able to start playing the piano. And then all of a sudden, it was as if I was just observing somebody else playing the piano. And it was a very profound experience. So we've really had first-hand experience of what it is to live interdimensionally. And even still having a physical body, we are no longer confined to experiences just from the vantage point of the physical body or the brain. We're actually able to experience other dimensions simultaneously. And it is something very, very powerful and profound. Now, we've got just a couple of more minutes here, Yvonne. Is there anything that you would like to share with us, any experiences or anything pertinent that you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, I wanted to share with them to really listen to children. Children don't have all the programming that we have. They see, they hear, they experience. Some of the things that they tell you about seeing spirits, seeing ghosts or angels, they're real. They have no reason to lie. They have no point of reference for anything other than what they're telling you to be the truth. Listen to them. You may learn something. And the other one is, I just can't emphasize enough how important it is to have a living will. And if you do go to my website and click on the book link, there is a copy of A Living Will that can be downloaded for free on the website. I just want people to have that information to make that decision before it's necessary.
That is a very, very good idea. And in fact, I need to do the same thing myself. Silly me, I haven't done it yet. But that is wonderful to have. And also your point about the children is so important, because I had a client this last week who was telling me about her 4-year-old daughter who met a very special friend at a shopping mall, of all places, and brought the friend home and introduced her friend. Now, the friend was invisible to her mom, but what is interesting is that I started describing her daughter's little friend. And she said, yes, that's exactly how she described her. And I said, aha, that person is real. She's just on another dimension,
mm-hmm.
but she's a little girl, and she's a true companion to my client's daughter.
Right.
And so this was... You know, I was giving her a reading, and it was really exciting because I was actually able to validate her daughter's friend because I saw her exactly
mm-hmm.
as her daughter saw her. And you're right, children don't lie. They just are going to speak right out what they're seeing, what they're experiencing, what they're feeling, what they're knowing, because they are aware and they are brave and they don't know not to be
right. Exactly.
And not to be totally honest about their experiences. And it's so important that people listen to children. In fact, PMH Atwater was talking about this too when I interviewed her a fortnight ago. These new kids are tremendous, and they are born the way that a lot of us experience as being in the ears. They're born the way that we become as a result of India. They're just coming into this plane that way. So we really need to listen to them because they're so full of wisdom and knowledge. So I really, really want to thank you for sharing with us, Yvonne. It's been so wonderful to have you with us.
And I appreciate so much the opportunity to be able to share my story.
Well, thank you. And again, go to Yvonne Perry's website, YvonnePerry.net. That's YvonnePerry.net. And the book that we have been discussing is More Than Meets the Eye, True Stories About Death, Dying, and Afterlife. And actually, you will find More Than Meets the Eye on my website, towardthelight.org. And you can order it from me also, because that will help support this radio show, and it will also help support the Friends of Iron. So I really want to thank you for listening to us wherever you are, and blessings to all of you. And please remember, only love prevails.
I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Dr. Ann West. I'll be back next week with more Truth from the Source. Join me again on bbsradio.com every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'll bring you more cutting-edge interviews discussing important life, health, environmental, and metaphysical issues that could affect the well-being of our lives. Dr. Ann West at www.drannwest.com. See you next week.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.